Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Dan. So Dan, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Sure. My name is Dan Fortick. I live in Cleveland area, Ohio, and basically I'm the owner of a video production company called BVS Film Productions and also a division called Premier Podcast Productions.
Awesome. So can you tell us more about your company and how you got started and what gave you the idea to start this company?
Yeah, so I've been in the ad business for probably 25 years, and I had an ad agency prior to this. And, you know, we grew, we started small, you know, it was a phone and a desk back in those days where you know, you do 100 calls a day and you try to get customers. And it was, it took a couple of years to really get it off the ground. And at the time I had some partners and we grew that. And around 2009, we kind of reinvented ourselves due to the economy and everything. And we created a group called BVS Film Productions. Well, actually, it was a budget Marcom Solutions, which evolved into a video production company. And we found a real nice niche back then, working not necessarily with ad agencies, but kind of going in between advertising agencies and video groups. Because a lot of times these ad agencies didn't have video production in-house. So we would go to the companies and say, hey, you know, we're a video production company. We know marketing and we'd like to, you know, work with you on, you know, developing your campaigns. And back then video was kind of in its infancy. There wasn't a lot of people doing it in marketing. So, you know, it kind of grew from there. You know, we started seeing, you know, some really weird, oddly enough, our small boutique company, we started seeing some billion-dollar companies coming to us saying, hey, I can't get my videos done in-house. You know, can you guys do this for us? I said, and their big thing was turnkey. You know, they didn't care what it cost. Once you become a vendor, you know, just get it done. Our main focus is get it done on time. So that became a nice niche for us. And we kind of grew the business from there.
When you say niche, you know, focusing with larger companies, like was it a certain industry or like what types of videos did you produce in those early days?
Oh, gosh. Back then it was film. You know, I mean, you had the camera and it was actually it was at the crux of it. It was just turning digital back in those days. But, you know, the type of videos we produced back then were primarily corporate videos. They were 5 to 7 to 8 minutes long, you know, and, you know, nobody knew any better, you know, to make short videos. You know, everybody wanted to make a movie and be Martin Scorsese, you know, at that point. So, you know, we kind of, you know, learned over time as social media started coming into play. You know, you really got to breathe these things shorter, you know, get them into 2 minutes and or less. And then just past a couple of years, it's like 15 seconds, you know, just grab people, you know. So that's kind of the growth of it, I guess, progression. Well,
so in terms of videos, were they like advertisements or were they more of like informative videos, like, you know, especially, you know, 2009, as you mentioned, it was like a different time. Social media was not what it is today. So right. What did that look like in terms of like when they were coming to you for video content? Like, can you get like a little bit more specific of like, you know, where it was going to, you know, videos for their customers or what types of videos like were they looking?
I'd say 95% of them were just corporate videos, you know, just, you know, you'd have music playing in the background. We had a guy, there was one that we were doing, it was for a recycling company and he had this big camera we'd put on our shoulder and he'd be hanging over the edge of this big thing that's grinding up, you know, bottles or something, you know, for recycling. And, you know, so things like that were going on. Every so often we would interview someone, but it was back then it was voiceover, music, and B-roll. That was probably almost 90% of the videos we were doing. And they, like I said, they last between 5 and 7 minutes and they try to get everything in one video for the most part.
So in terms of execution, like what does that look like for you? I mean, I'm assuming I'm not sure if early on, if you were the one recording the videos, like how did you find people to record the videos and keep them to be high quality and out as quickly as possible?
At this point or back then, you think?
I can, you know, back then, like, and even now.
Okay. One more time on that question. Sorry.
So, like, were you the one recording the videos early on? Or did you have people? And, like, if so, and even now, how do you find the right videographers to make sure the videos are like high quality? Because I'm sure not anybody off the street can come in and record videos for your company.
Yeah, right. So back then we had, there were no iPhones. There was no, it was big, luggy, gigantic things you put on your shoulder. And back then we had like one or two go-to guys that we worked with. They were, very professional. I know we could trust them. It was more about attitude and knowing what looks good. I also had a photographer on staff back then. He didn't have any formal education, but at the time I had a partner, and my partner was like, "You got to look at this guy. It was good stuff. It was really good stuff. He's got an eye for it." So we brought him on board, and he really helped us out a lot in the early days when we were doing photography and then getting into video. Moving forward now, it's really strange. This year, we've been doing probably 50% of our work has been brokering shoots for people in other states and other countries and all over the place. And some of our really big customers are like, "You're a preferred vendor. So we'd rather just run it through you. You broker it, and then you guys do the editing." So I'm finding that to be very effective for our company, and it's just kind of like a way you evolve, and that's just come by over the past 2 years. So I'm seeing that. We have a small staff of video editors, and also another group that we work with in our building that also is our shooters. But for the most part, even if I'm 200 miles away, 200, 100 miles away from us, I'll broker it to someone else. And there's a lot of guys out there, the way to know what a good videographer is two things. One is you look at their work. That's primarily it. If you look at it and go, "Wow, that doesn't look quite right," probably isn't, if it looks really nice and it's smooth and it looks professional, that's a big factor. Number two is go look at their Google reviews. You'll know pretty quick if they have a 50 or 100 Google reviews. Most of those guys don't have time to cheat and or want to cheat and put robots in there. So that helps a lot, looking at those. And lastly, I guess personality. They must get along with our customer. There cannot be any egos whatsoever. So before we do any shoots with anyone, we make sure we sit down with them and we give them a quick, once over in a Zoom meeting, like something we're doing now. And if any spider senses go up, plenty of guys out there, So that's probably the three big things we look at when we bring on shooters to use them.
So when you're outsourcing these shooters for your clients, do you have like non-competes or like what does that look like? 'Cause I'm sure maybe you're concerned about maybe them going outside of you and go working with a client directly. So what does that look like to prevent these types of situations from happening?
Well, I've been on both sides of that fence, and I have been in a situation where we've had four post massacres where customers are working directly. They're going to do it, and you don't want to work with those kind of people. It's going to happen out there, and sometimes you have to find out the hard way. Again, I go back to the Google reviews. If there's any bad ones out there, it usually pops up pretty quick. Or you can go to Glassdoor or any one of those online things, and bad news travels very quickly. But for the most part, I'm finding out most of the guys are they just want to work, and they understand how important it is to build a relationship because we may have another shoot next month for them. So the other thing is try not to get somebody that's brand new. Get someone that's 5 or 10 years into the business. They've been around the block, and the ones that haven't didn't make that 5 or 10 years. There's a reason for that.
No, yeah, that makes sense. So in terms of, outsourcing, you mentioned 100, 200 miles. Like, I mean, are you covering all of the US or all around the world? Like, what is the limit for you when people are looking to, or I guess looking for your guidance? So that's, yeah, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. I would say the continental U.S. is probably our limitation now. Although we did have one that wanted us to go to Paris and do this. It's like wasn't in the budget, And for us, you start getting into other languages, and you can't really. It's hard to deal with that. So U.S. primarily.
But I'm saying, is it like a certain, I mean, you're in Cleveland, right? So is it like a lot of people in the Midwest or a certain region of the country, like Chicago, or are you doing like a lot like in New York, Texas, California? Like where, where are most of the people finding you? Like where are they located?
Yeah, so most of them come from two or three bigger clients that we have that have plants in those cities or hubs in those cities. So the main ones are usually like Chicago, New York. We do quite a bit of California for some reason. And so they have like these hubs, and we would just use through them, we would hire people in that general area. It's usually bigger cities, I would say.
What would you say is the biggest challenge that you're facing in the business today?
It's a good question. Part of it is organization and keeping everything, all in place and finding good people that can help you keep it all organized. We're starting to reach out overseas for help in that area, and it's a little bit of a challenge. You have to find the right people. There's timing issues. And the other thing is the dips you get these up and downs, and this past year, we changed that a little bit. We started to work on more of a subscription basis for our podcast, especially. And that's one reason we did go into podcasting, is because, it adds that steady income. And there's podcasts every month, that kind of thing. So those are probably two big things, the fluctuation in cash flow, and then also keeping it all organized when you're dealing with podcasters, for example.
So in terms of like obviously you've gotten into this podcast space, kind of recently, but like what is it like the bigger vision for the company? I mean, where do you see it going? Is there like a certain revenue goal that you're targeting or like where do you really want to take this company?
Yeah, so on our end, I'm looking at probably an exit strategy in the next 5 to 8 years. For me, I do have a son that works in our company, and he's debating, and who knows what kids are, kids, he's 30, what people want to do. And we have to look at that, and we may do that, or we may look at, selling or partnering with someone else at some point. Size of the company, I think we'd want to at least triple in size over the next 3 years. And we want to do that through the podcast world and with a steady income. I think that's really the key. Somewhere in the 50 to 75 accounts for podcasts would be a nice number that I think would help us reach that goal at this
So
point.
50 to 75 accounts, like how much on average is each podcast you're paying? You're like, what kind of revenue numbers are you looking to reach?
Yeah, so for that, we want to get into the 1 to 3 million, I say, for annual revenue. Podcasting ranges anywhere from $500 a month to 5,000 a month, depending on what. We also want to branch that out. We're researching and doing going to be rolling out a new campaign that's going to be called Industry Leader Program. And so it's for all the podcasters that want to start really getting to the next level with their marketing end of it. So we partner with marketers to make that happen through different programs. So that's some of the things we're looking at.
What is the strategy that you're using? I mean, obviously you mentioned before the call that you wrote a book and that's gotten you some recognition, but like, what do you use in terms of growing this business? Is it like a lot of email marketing? Do you run, lots of ads? Like, how do people find out about you in 2023?
Well, we've done a lot through LinkedIn. LinkedIn's been a big player for us. A lot of direct contact. We have some groups in the Philippines that reach out for us in certain areas for that. Some of the new things we're going to be working with this year, I partnered with some social media ad group that we're working with, which also is going to double as a group that we can use for our customers to start doing some paid ads. I think that's going to be a factor moving forward. I also brought on a business coach that, it's nice to talk to somebody that's from the outside in looking at your company. I would strongly suggest that, for any business that wants to grow, you can work on your in your business, but you've heard that expression, you got to work on your business more than that. Really hard to do, but you have to do it.
That makes sense. So obviously now in 2023, there's a big movement to use artificial intelligence when it comes to business. So what does that look like for you? Are you using it? And if not, like what are some of the use cases that you're seeing in the industry for AI?
Yeah, so we use it every day. Primarily, we do it with ChatGPT and some of the other ones for gathering information, like when for show notes, things of this nature. They fantastic packages out there that can do that. I still job it out, but I know they're using AI to do it, And the cost goes way down, which is very nice. And we can pass it along to our clients in many cases. We also use it for SEO on the show notes and some of the articles we put out. Sometimes it can get a little over the top and you really got to watch it close at times. It's more, from what we're finding out, it's more about, you know, what you tell it to do and then what it thinks you told it to do. There's a really fine line there. I'll give you an example. I asked ChatGPT to make a profile on my name in my city, you know, and I told him it's my company. This is my company. So it came back saying I was best friends with Martin Scorsese and I wrote the Titanic. I directed the Titanic. It just came up with things because it couldn't find certain things about me. It just put it in there. Completely wrong. So I would say when you use AI, you got to really watch it and you have to direct it on exactly what you want it to do.
No, 100%. You know, we're in the AI space. And I think prompting is something that we always talk about. It's very important that you prompt it and train the machine learning and AI correctly. So on that note, have you looked into, for example, having high-level AI chatbots that can communicate with your potential clients, your current clients, you know, even on social media? Have you looked at some of these channels to kind of streamline communication across the board?
Yeah, we're just starting to do that now. We have one group that we're kind of partnering with for the social media paid ads, and they have a chatbot named Natalie that they use. And they did research and they found out that Natalie was a name that is most comfortable with anybody that talks to a robot. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So we're experimenting with it, I think, at this point.
No, for sure. I think AI is something that, to your point earlier, it's something that can really help your business and help you save money and time, but it needs to be used in the right manner. So what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this business?
I think if I go back to the beginning, one would be watch the debt that you decide to go into and make sure it's good debt and not bad debt. Bad debt is buying a desk that you don't need and putting it on a whatever or anything like that. Make sure your debt makes you money and it becomes an asset for you. That's probably the main thing I would have liked to have known when I first started in the business.
So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website and social media handles? Best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, the best way to reach me would be info@danportik.com, danportik.com. My company is BVS Film Productions. And then that's bvsfilmproductions.com. And then the podcast is premierpodcastpros.com.
Awesome. Well, Dan, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. And we're rooting for you. Hopefully you guys keep scaling and, you know, you can have that big exit in a few years.
I like that. Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.